Pure Dog Talk is the podcast on purebred dogs. We talk to the legends in the sport and give you tips and tools to create an awesome life with your purebred dog. From showing to preservation breeding, from competitive obedience to field work, from agility to therapy dogs, and all the fun in between, your passion is our purpose. Pure Dog Talk is sponsored by ChampionshipBreeders.com. Championship Breeders is a proud supporter of the American Kennel Club, our specialty and all breed clubs, our dog sports, and the gifts of therapy and service from our canine companions.
Welcome to Pure Dog Talk. I'm your host, Laura Reeves. And today we have a very special and very, very interesting guest that I'd like for you guys to get a chance to listen to. Our guest today is Pat Fendley, and she is a breeder of Spinoni Italiano. And she put her breed ahead of her breeding program in a way that I think many of us would do well to emulate. So thank you very much. I appreciate you joining us, Pat.
You're very welcome, Laura.
Excellent.
I'm glad to be here.
And I'm glad that you are going to talk to us a little bit about cerebellar ataxia.
Yes.
Almost.
You got it.
Okay. So this is a disease that affects Spinoni Italiani, but also other breeds.
Absolutely.
Okay. So how did you first come into interaction with this situation?
Maybe I need to start at the beginning.
Absolutely.
In the spring of 1998.
Okay.
The Italian Spinoni Club of Great Britain officially recognized this disease in the breed.
Okay. So that's 30 years ago.
Absolutely.
30 years ago.
Between March of 1990 and November of 1997, there were 14 cases in 8 litters born in the UK. 3 affected puppies born to 2 litters in Denmark.
Okay.
Now, you notice that this didn't get recognized until 1998.
So it took a while for people to really admit that this was out there, talk about it publicly?
It was kept a secret.
Okay.
Very quiet.
Okay.
You know, breeders keep it in the closet.
Okay.
We don't talk about it. My dogs are perfect.
Right.
But typically, pet people bring things out.
Eventually, it comes out into the open.
It's going to be the pet people. And at that point, in 1998, they started to work on putting together a list of proven carriers and that kind of thing.
Okay.
For this, and working with a geneticist and with the Royal Veterinary College on perhaps...
In Great Britain.
In Great Britain, because all this started in Great Britain.
Okay.
I got involved in it because I had done 2 breedings using Gaste and Vinda Peiro, who had been imported to the U.S., and he actually sired one of the litters that had CA in it.
That had affected puppies.
Had affected puppies and in Great Britain.
In Great Britain. So did you have affected puppies in your litter, or you just learned of his affected puppies in another litter?
I found out about it. It all came to light out of the closet when I had the second litter that was just a few weeks old. And let me tell you, that's a nightmare.
And your puppies were on the ground when this all blew up.
They were on the ground. The first litter was 2 years old.
Okay.
And everybody went crazy.
Sure. I mean, this is a hard thing.
Of course, I was talking to people who had puppies reserved about what their options were, what we could look forward to, da-da-da-da-da. All the while, getting all these nasty phone calls denouncing me as an ethical breeder.
Sure.
Telling me I needed to put all these puppies down and as many of the older ones as I could, and to put down the dams of these litters because, of course, they could be contaminated.
Oh, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was nasty. It was nasty.
Okay. All right. So definitely dog breeding is not for the faint of heart.
We got it.
We knew
not.
That.
Absolutely not.
We knew that. So fast forward, and there was an organization in England that started doing research on this specific disease.
The Royal Veterinary College in Great Britain initially started.
Okay.
But the Animal Health Trust took it over because they had more access, if you will, to grants.
Resources.
Resources and that type thing. But as those years were going on, so many of the samples that they were able to gather from these early cases became degraded because they were saving them in wax.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
This is a long time ago, guys.
Yes, absolutely. So they became degraded or lost. Mm-hmm. They lost them.
Okay.
And it looked like we weren't going to be able to do anything because no new cases were coming out.
Which in and of itself is, you think that's a blessing, but at the same time...
For research, it's a nightmare because they needed affected puppies in order to do this. Well, a group of us talked about doing a control litter in the UK using two known carriers.
Right.
Which would have been wonderful. We would have known.
Wonderful then. In terms of research.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the powers that be would not condone such a drastic move.
Okay.
That's when, knowing what I knew about test breeding control litters with the Alaskan Malamutes. Mm-hmm. So I knew what all this was about. I knew about the emotional baggage.
Mm-hmm. And so, briefly to interject here, you had been involved in test breeding with Alaskan Malamutes on dwarfism. And so you knew that piece. And can you tell us about this disease? Can you tell us about what happens to the affected puppies?
Of cerebellar ataxia.
Correct.
All right. Cerebellar ataxia involves the movement of the puppies, their ability to motivate here and there. And it progresses at an astonishing rate. It starts out, the first symptoms will be a little bit of staggering, weaving, if you will, occasionally a stumble. And it so rapidly progresses that within a couple of months, they get to the point where they literally cannot stand, even to relieve themselves or move away from it. And at that point, they have to be euthanized.
Okay, so this is a definitely deadly disease. This isn't something that these puppies are going to recover from.
No, it is a lethal disease.
So you, as a breeder, someone dedicated to your breed, made the decision that you were going to personally do a test breeding.
Yes.
Knowing what that was going to entail.
Yes. And I talked with my counterparts because I was working closely with the people in the UK and became wonderful friends with Pat mm-hmm. Wilkinson, who was the coordinator of the subcommittee mm-hmm. on CA.
Mm-hmm. And so because there was stigma associated within the parent club?
Absolutely.
And so then therefore people were not willing to expose this.
That's right.
The only way that you could move forward in the research is to offer up one of your own personal dogs to do a test breeding. Is that correct?
I used two of my own dogs because the sire was just up the road from me. Mm-hmm. And I called his owner and said, you know, I want to use Payroll.
The original affected dog.
No, he's carrier. The carrier okay. that okay. came to the
yep.
U.S.
There you go.
And she neutered him. Even though I had begged her not to do it, just in case we ever had to take this step.
And so that hard line between, I'm going to neuter the dog because I don't want to have these genes carried forward, and the idea of research and needing those genes in order to forward the knowledge gathering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So at that point, I had access to two dogs and two bitches from my first litter.
Okay. That were out of this
that were
carrier
sired
dog.
By Payroll.
Okay.
And then trying to decide which two to use.
Mm-hmm.
And as I told everybody, I'll never know what made me make that decision, but there was a hand on my shoulder. Because when the test was developed, the other two littermates were clear.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so the test that was developed that proved they were clear was a direct result of the breeding that you did.
Absolutely.
And so that breeding that you did that cost you emotionally,
yeah.
horribly,
yeah.
okay, is what developed the eventual genetic test that was able to prove your other two dogs clear, and how many additional dogs in the breed have been tested at this point? Do you have numerically, do you know, across the, around the world?
Around the world, probably 400.
So you gave of yourself and your breeding program to save 400 other heartbreaks.
Well, and there were others too, because after I had this litter, then there were a couple other litters that were born accidentally that produced affected puppies, and they submitted samples also.
Excellent. So that before the actual genetic test, between when you did your litter and when they were able to do the genetic test, which was what, like 8 years, 10 years?
2008 was when the test was actually released, which was almost exactly 5 years from when I had said goodbye to my puppies.
And in your litter of four, you had two that were affected.
Yes.
And they lived until they were how old?
About 9 months. There was only about a 2 month span. It was early in May when I noticed their first symptoms, in the middle of July when I said goodbye.
And that is the breeder's worst nightmare.
That you gave
to your breed.
Yeah. While the puppies were growing up, I was able to track down so many of the other Peyrot offspring here in the U.S. and beg them for blood or cheek swabs. And, of course, some ignore you, some just flat decline. But I was able to gather samples from 28 dogs.
Which is an amazing research value.
Yes, that I was able to send to the Animal Health Trust in addition to the samples from Latte and Espresso.
Your puppies.
My puppies.
And you also worked with Cornell University, is that correct?
We did. Right. My vet has a subspecialty in neurology, but he wanted that extra little bit, and they were very interested in it.
Sure.
So he used them as a guidance tool, so he didn't skip any steps.
Sure. And can you tell us what other breeds, do you know off the top of your head, other breeds that are affected with the CA?
Parson Russell Terriers have both an early onset and a late onset.
Interesting.
And I think they have done their own test.
Genetic test specific.
Genetic test, mm-hmm. I think they have to test for both. Amstaffs have a very late onset, like 6 or 7 years.
Oh my gosh.
So the dogs have already been used. I don't think they've got a test yet. Gordon Setters, I think. Caton de Tulier.
Oh my gosh, okay.
So, you know, and it comes at different times.
Sure.
In the Spinoni, it doesn't affect them until they're around 6 or 7 months. But by the time they're a year, they're gone.
Okay, so we're going to take that and we're going to take that hard story and use it to talk about what other folks can do. Your suggestion, your advice to breeders in all breeds about how they can put their breed ahead of themselves.
Be open and honest with your health issues. Don't keep them hidden. Talk about them. Share them. If somebody comes and says, "Have you had any problems?" Don't say, "Oh no, my dogs are perfect." You can't do that. We would have been so much farther along on that test if the people back in 1990, when they were first having these problems with CA, if they had been honest at that time instead of keeping it hidden. And the problem was, it was so well hidden, we're not sure that we had a complete list of affected puppies.
Interesting. And is this a disease that prior to its being really recognized and talked about, would people have thought it was something else and maybe not been specifically hiding it, but rather like confused as to what it might be?
Not really.
Okay. I was trying to offer an easy out here. So the biggest thing that you offer as a recommendation based on your own literally blood, sweat, and tears, be honest with your puppy buyers, be honest with people that are breeding down from your dogs.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. It has always been my mantra. You have to be honest, because truthfully, it's going to end up coming back to bite you.
Eventually it all comes out.
That's right. That's exactly right. So get it right in the first place.
And so do you have any recommendations in terms of, God forbid anyone should ever have to go through what you did in terms of a test, in terms of a test breeding and developing that? But we see an awful lot of very normal, regular disease processes in our dogs. That have you found CHIC, the Canine Health Information Center, have you found that type of process to be useful in helping people to engage and to put the information out there and to share knowledge?
Yes and no. My problem with CHIC is the fact that they will issue a number if a dog has been tested. Not necessarily if it's passed.
Correct. And I think the idea with that is to encourage the testing, right? Get the information.
But the problem is, and I've seen this in the last couple of years, we have breeders that are using this CHIC number. Well, my dogs have a CHIC number. The fact that the dog also has hip and elbow dysplasia is really beside the point, and they're breeding a dog with bad hips and bad elbows, but it has a CHIC number. And the pet people buy the puppies.
And so, strong word of caution to people who are breeding their dogs, as well as people who are buying dogs. Having a CHIC number is wonderful. It means that you are testing. It means that you are sharing information. But in terms of breeding dogs, you would be looking for dogs that have actually passed each of the tests.
Absolutely.
That are represented in the Canine Health Information Center's CHIC number.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's great. That's
my problem.
Yeah, and it's valid. I mean, I think that's something that people have talked about. But I think for me anyway, and I think for some breeders, it outweighs the value of the knowledge, the value of the sharing the information outweighs that downside. And so other lessons that you took away from your experience as a breeder.
From the CA.
Tell us about your litter that you did to the dog that was affected. This was really interesting. Your old dog that you had in frozen semen.
Okay. Well, because we got the test,
right,
we could go back to use dogs like this that were so valuable that got shunned and tossed away.
Because they were as a carrier.
Because of that, and could potentially be a carrier. And we lost a lot of things in the breed. We lost bone. We lost substance. We lost some of the heads. The essence, if you will, of the Italian Spinola. And because we had the test, we could go back to it for those of us who were lucky enough to have saved semen. And thank goodness my vet talked me out of dumping that semen. Because then, a number of years later, I have been able to use that frozen semen and had a litter of puppies that were tested. Half of the puppies were clear, which was more than we could ask for.
Out of your carrier dog from frozen semen.
Out of my carrier dog.
And that is the beauty of science right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The carrier puppies were sold on a spay-neuter contract, placed in pet homes with limited registration. And luckily, the best puppies in the litter, the very best ones, were the clear puppies.
I love that.
And you may have seen my Charlie, my white and brown boy.
Yeah.
He is a son, CA tested clear,
out of
the
your
first AKC Spinoni champion.
And I think that that is what's so valuable, is to see that, not just that you went through the horror, but then that the horror paid off.
That's
for the
right.
breed, for you personally, but for science, for all of us, this sort of thing is useful, and you can continue to improve your breed by just having knowledge.
That's exactly right. And can pull back in those wonderful genes.
Right. Okay, in closing, you were talking about being a pedigree whore.
Yes.
I love that. So yes. give us just a brief understanding of how that knowledge of pedigrees, and not just the three-generation pedigree, but the depth of the pedigree, how that helped you solve this puzzle.
Well, we studied the pedigrees, you know, on the affected puppies early on. Dr. Kadanak helped us with that. And we kept seeing this common dog, Tresco, who was an Italian import into the UK.
Okay.
And so, and for many years, everybody said, oh, it's Tresco. It was a mutant gene. No. Some of us were really looking at this stuff and we're going, here's other things here. Here's dogs here that we need to be looking at and that kind of thing. But over here especially, it was, oh, CA all started in England and it was a mutant gene that Tresco had. Well, it wasn't, because we went back and with the Dutch CA litter and the Italian CA litter, I think you were in there during that.
Yes.
And they were litter mates.
So it wasn't an individual dog. And by using the pedigree research, you were able to expand that search for potential carrier and affected puppies.
Yes. And we always looked for that common denominator. And what are we seeing here?
And it's further back.
And it's further back. And we just kept looking at it and learning from it. And there are a whole lot of people that do that.
And yet we would encourage it as something that's valuable to our breeds, all breeds.
But there are very few people that have a database that's got 25,000 dogs in it either.
And that's something that you have, and that is a blessing to you.
I've been working on it for 25 years. So
right. The value of pedigree databases in any breed, I think, is highly underrated.
Yes.
In terms of not just health testing, but all of the pieces. Where did this piece come from? Where did that piece come from?
And, of course, I was lucky because I have traveled extensively. I've traveled to Italy. I've traveled to England. I've traveled to Scotland. I've traveled to Holland. So I've looked at all these dogs over the years. So a whole lot of it, I can look at a pedigree. And I also have seen so many of these dogs. And these people that are new in the breed that already know it all, haven't.
And I think that you've touched on a really, really important piece. National specialties. Seeing the dogs.
That's right.
Where else are you going to see that many dogs?
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Pat. I so appreciate your time. I know you've had a busy day today. And I really appreciate it. We'll provide some links to some information about this disease and the various places that they can learn more about it if they need it. Is that okay?
Wonderful. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Okay.
As always, if you have any questions or input, we'd love to hear from you. The show notes and links to resources on today's topic are available at puredogtalk.com. Drop us a note in the comments or email to laura@puredogtalk.com. Remember, guys, this podcast is for you. So if you want to know something, give me a holler. We'll do a podcast for you. If you wouldn't mind, you could help me out here. Take a couple minutes to visit iTunes and give us a review. This will help share the love with others out there in the sport. This has been Pure Dog Talk with your host, Laura Reeves. We hope you can join us next time as we continue on the journey to success with your purebred dog.